Please silence all electronic devices.
Representatives Brawley, Sane, Hastings, Martin, Setzer, and Soka are recognized.
So the bottom line is, folks, there are a lot of bad people out there.
I'm Elizabeth Dole, and I approve this message.
You're fired!
You know, the guy that used to sit in this chair had a saying, if you think everybody's good, you ain't met everybody.
Any further discussion or debate?
It's Thursday, November 16th, 2017. This is the WUNC Politics Podcast. Welcome inside the Museum of Natural Sciences in downtown Raleigh. I'm Jeff Tiberi, glad to have you along, and also glad to have Loretta Beniti here in studio to talk about her latest reporting, what's on the horizon in North Carolina politics, and maybe even some Thanksgiving Day favorites. Hi, Loretta.
Hello.
Well, we've been breathing dust-filled air at the legislature. Someone was out in the western part of the state recently, hitting the tables, cranking the slots. You had a story this week about Harris Casino on the Cherokee American Indian Reservation, which has now been open for 20 years. Let's start there, kind of away from the bubble of Raleigh. But what was that story all about?
Well, it was 20 years ago that the Eastern Band of Cherokee finished the negotiations with the state of North Carolina and then entered into the agreement with what's now Caesars Entertainment Group to open the casino. It was a pretty small casino when it first opened. By any standards, it was a small casino. By any standard, it is now quite a large casino and filled to capacity 90% of the time, which that's 1,100 rooms that are filled 90% of the times. And I hadn't been up there in about 5 years, which was when the state renegotiated its compact to allow for the live action gaming, cards, table games. In that time, it's amazing to see the number of hotels that have now built around the casino, which also told me while I was up there, they're filled to capacity every single night. So the tourism that the casino itself is bringing in for this very poor part of the state is pretty remarkable.
Are we talking, what does the clientele look like?
Clientele comes, a lot of it is from out of state. They bring in a lot of people from South Carolina, from Georgia, from Tennessee. And so that's a really big thing for the state because they're bringing in outside of state money into the state.
Right.
And then you also get people from the Asheville, Charlotte market that they say come over pretty frequently as well. And, you know, when we're talking, when they added the table games, they said the amount of money that people bet while they're there went up tremendously. You brought in a whole different type of clientele.
Everybody needs a friend, right?
That's right.
So is it simply a success story? Are there people that, you know, have had issues with this? Are there, I mean, not everything's wonderful and sunny.
So obviously the Eastern Band of Cherokee has had tremendous success from this. And now this was a tribe that was not doing well financially. They just didn't have a lot of options for them to make money. Now the payout that the tribe gets,
Members of
the tribe that they get annually, and it's all due to the casino, is $12,000 a year. That number will just continue to go up. In addition to that, they supplement things like college education for their tribe members. They supplement Medicaid payments for their elderly. They've bought a hospital with cash on the boundary, which that only helps the Eastern Band, but now their old hospital will help the rest of the community in Western North Carolina because they're turning that into a rehab facility that they don't have in the western part of the state.
Are there any other casinos in North Carolina?
They're only the other one that the Eastern Band now has two casinos. They opened a second one in Murphy, which is about the same size that the one was in Cherokee when it opened. I drove all the way out to Murphy. Yeah. I can now say I've been from Murphy to Manio.
It's a big state.
Drove out to Murphy, and they've been open 2 years. They're under construction to expand.
Wow. Okay. So the Cherokee tribe is the only tribe in the state, correct me if I'm mistaken on this, that has federal recognition.
That is correct.
There's also the Lumbee Nation, the Lumbee tribe, and there has been a push for years for them to get federal recognition. Is there a push on that front?
We're seeing a push from Representative Robert Pittenger to see if he can help the Lumbees get the recognition. Having lived in other states, I've watched as other tribes and other states have also been going through this process of trying to get the federal recognition. It's a really long process in order for a tribe to get that because they get a lot of federal funding. As soon as they get the federal recognition, they have rights, things like the gaming, to add that. So in order to, once you say that the tribe is federally recognized, it really changes a lot of what they're able to do. But yes, there is a push right now to see if the Lumbee tribe can get that recognition.
Other than bureaucracy and just kind of a long marathon of a process to get through, are there other obstacles for them that you're aware of?
Not that I'm aware of. You really have to go through quite a process to make sure that they don't want to recognize too many tribes or too many distinctions of tribes. Notice when I refer to the Cherokee, I keep saying the Eastern Band of Cherokee.
Yes.
There's multiple Cherokee tribes that are recognized. So for the Lumbees, it's the same thing, that they need to make sure that this is a distinct group of this tribe that they would recognize.
Okay. So this story was part of your 30-minute program that runs each week now, in Focus, on Sundays, right? 11:30 and 8:30?
That's correct.
If I have that right.
Yes.
You've now done 17 or 18 of these episodes.
Yes.
This is a relatively new addition to what I would say is a robust political media landscape within Raleigh. Tell us a little bit about In Focus.
In Focus, we take one issue that's facing the state. It does not have to be a breaking news issue that's happening that day, but it's an issue that people are talking about in the state, people are dealing with it in the state, and we spend the entire half hour talking about that issue. We bring in policymakers, we bring in people who are affected by it, we bring in some of the nonprofits who are working on it, whoever's considered an expert on the area. We normally have about 6 guests per show that are from all around the state, and we've really done a range of topics on the show. I mean, as you said, we're doing the casino this week. We've done foster care. We've done the hemp industry. This is a wide-ranging show.
What haven't you got to kind of chip away at yet that you're hoping to spend a 30-minute program on?
Well, we're working on doing a program for the beginning of the new year about community and police relations. We've done a lot about education. I think that is going to be an issue that we're constantly working on here in the state. We want to talk about, I can't help it, being a member of the media, that I want to talk a little bit more about the transparency and sunshine laws in the state and where things stand with that. So we've got a lot that we would like to talk about.
Indeed. Your guest here on the WDNC Politics Podcast is Loretta Beniti. You can follow her on Twitter at LoretttaBoniti. I have an Italian name too, so I almost botched your name. What is the most common misspelling of your name that you get?
Most people say Benita for my last name. Yeah, they turn it into Spanish and assume that that's what my last name is.
All right, fair enough. I imagine one of the things that you will spend time on, and if you already mentioned this, I'm just not awake on this Thursday morning, is judicial reform, these ongoing conversations about judicial reform. Quick update, if any, from you, or any sense of where things stand. We hear about it a little bit from listeners. There's the judicial redistricting, which I think has legal problems if it moves forward. There's the 2-year referendum, the constitutional referendum to reduce all terms to 2 years, which I think has all kinds of problems from within the legal community. I mean, they seem to hate it. And then there are these rumblings about a possible constitutional amendment on the May ballot that would put the question before the voters as to whether or not voters would no longer vote on judges, and there would be a merit selection process, a legislative selection process. So I just gave the nuts and bolts, probably what you wanted to touch on, but where do things stand? Are there any new developments on this front?
I'm not sure that there's any new developments. Let's start with the 2-year terms.
Okay.
I don't think that bill is going anywhere.
Mm-mm.
I think it was meant to spark a conversation and say, hey, we think that judges need to be more accountable. I don't think it was actually filed as a bill that, hey, we think that this actually should become law.
Agreed.
I could obviously be proven wrong. I've been proven wrong by the legislature in the past, but that's my sense from that bill going forward. It's meant to spark a conversation.
Right.
When we talk about redistricting, the House has obviously already passed the redistricting. The Senate is not as excited about passing this redistricting. However, even though we're hearing from folks in the legal community, judicial community, please don't do this so fast. Please don't do this. It's the please don't do this so fast. It's please let other people do this. It's not that it doesn't need to be done.
Right.
And I think that you're going to see plenty of folks that support this get behind that, saying, you're not telling us that our districts are good right now. And if they're not good, we should be doing this. So you're going to hear this conversation continue. I'm not convinced yet that the Senate is ready to go ahead and pass this.
You're talking about specifically judicial redistricting.
Judicial redistricting, yes. I'm just not convinced at this point that they're ready to go with that. Now, then you brought up the constitutional amendment. Mm-hmm. That is something that the Senate is more interested in. And we've all seen this before with the bargaining of, if you do this, then we'll do this.
Right.
So I think there's a possibility with this idea of the constitutional amendment that if the Senate really, really wants that to go on the ballot, they might agree to do some judicial redistricting so that the House will put that amendment onto the ballot.
Getting way ahead of ourselves. If a constitutional amendment were to get on the ballot, were to be placed on the ballot in May, what's your sense really early on now, right? We're 5-6 months out. What's your sense of whether or not the people at this point in the political climate of North Carolina and nationally, would they vote for effectively no longer having a vote for judicial races?
I don't see that happening. If people are paying attention to what it is they're voting for, I don't see it happening simply because it is taking it away from them. It's currently something that we're allowed to do. Whether or not people pay attention to who the judges are or not, well, that's a whole nother question.
Right. That's a different issue.
But nobody likes the idea of taking a vote away from them, and I think it would have a really hard time.
Want to transition and talk a little bit about this broad conversation of sexual harassment that has been playing out across various industries. I think it really blew open with Harvey Weinstein, but we've seen it more recently with Louis C.K. There were hearings on Capitol Hill this week talking about some of the harassment and totally inappropriate behavior that staffers and interns there have suffered. We've seen stories out of Denver and Boston and Austin, state capitals, as it pertains to dynamics between lawmakers and legislators and staffers. I believe there's a letter from the female lawmakers in Sacramento who kind of came together in unity to condemn the culture out there in California. The question here, at least the initial one, is if you had a friend, a colleague, a cousin, a niece, a nephew, whatever, somebody came to visit you next week, wasn't from North Carolina, and, you know, as this larger conversation is going on, said, "Hey, Loretta, what's it like within the walls of the legislature? How would you kind of frame that up?"
I think that the term you keep using, culture, is probably a good term to use. I'm not sure that I see it as rampant here in North Carolina as some of these other cases that have now come to light with what's been going on. I do think that there is a culture that, with perhaps the tone that some men use, be them elected officials or other people who work within the legislative compound, that they say things to women that I think that they think is, I don't think that they are looking at it as sexual harassment, but for a woman who might not want that type of attention, I could certainly see in cases that it's there.
Are we talking about, well, let me not even lead you any which way. What are we talking about? What is the culture? What are the words, or what's the body language?
I mean, there are folks who, men who see no problem with putting their hands around women's shoulders, complimenting them on the way that they look that day, commenting on an outfit that they have on. None of this stuff is meant as a derogatory thing or a mean thing, and I think that they find it as being social. But to a certain extent, when you are in a professional relationship or atmosphere with somebody, when they put their arms around you, that does have a sense of the sexual harassment connotation.
Are there lawmakers or staffers or folks within that building, and to, I guess, be totally transparent, members of the press corps, it could even, I would hope not, but could be a possibility. Are there folks that you try to avoid in one-on-one situations, or that you wouldn't go into an office alone or an elevator alone with them? I mean, those are two of the examples we've seen or heard about from other state houses.
Personally, no. I don't think that I have gotten to that point with anyone. Are there certain people that I expect to hear things from? Sure. But I'm fine. I consider myself as one of those people who says, just suck it up and deal with it.
You have also reported in Atlanta and in Richmond, two other state capitals. Compare and contrast, if you have examples off the top of your head, how Raleigh is in comparison with those two.
I would say probably when I was in Richmond, I saw more of it while I was reporting in Richmond. There were a lot more cases that you knew of inappropriate relationships, comments that were made, that kind of thing. I think there was a lot closer relationship. It's a little bit different culture in Richmond. There's a lot more of a closeness between the lawmakers and lobbyists and even the press corps. And so I think that line got blurred quite a bit while I was in Richmond.
Candidly, I'm a man, you're a woman. Perhaps it is easier for women to talk to women about some of these issues. Maybe. What have you heard from folks, conversations that you've had when there aren't microphones in front of mouths? Because that obviously makes this a little bit easier to talk about when people aren't being recorded.
I think that it's interesting that, as you say, it's easier for women to talk to women. I don't think prior to any of this coming forward, it was even easier for women to talk to women. Okay. Women just kept it to themselves. And I think that's what's probably most prevalent about this. Now that people are talking about it, yes, I think that women are talking to women more. And, you know, as I've mentioned, I work in both news and in politics. Mm-hmm. So I'm in two fields where it's male-dominated industries. And, yeah, women that I have talked to have definitely felt throughout their careers that they just have to grin and bear it. That nobody that I've talked to has been to a point where it's gotten too far down the road, but they have been in multiple situations where they have felt uncomfortable with comments that have been made by somebody who is an authority figure.
I don't believe there is a regular sexual harassment training that legislators have to go through here. Are there changes that you think are necessary? Are there elements or things that need to be implemented? I mean, you could juxtapose them to Atlanta and Richmond. Were there safeguards in place, or were there reporting mechanisms elsewhere, or do there need to be any changes here?
I don't know if there's really actual mechanisms that need to be put into place. Perhaps it's just good that this conversation is out there now, and perhaps it'll be enough to make people stop and think for a second, mm-hmm, before they say or do something. I mean, you can always complain to an ethics committee if you find it necessary about something. We work in the media. We certainly have a platform if somebody is really out of control. But again, it's never going to be easy for somebody to come forward. You see that even if people believe the accusers as they come forward, it's such a hard thing because it's really hard to prove, to have that factual, right, black and white information. Right. So it's always going to be a tough issue.
And the dynamic of power is front and center. Lobbyists, lobbyists' professional viability, livelihood, I mean, their careers depend on having good relationships with lawmakers. So that's a dangerous thing to jeopardize. Our careers, I would say maybe to a lesser extent, depend on having good relationships with lawmakers and having access to them. So there are relationships at play, and it's a complicated thing, for sure. And I think it's a conversation that will certainly continue here in Raleigh. Some lighter questions to wrap this up with. Total curveball. Top five minds in North Carolina politics.
Oh, my goodness. That is a total curveball.
Your face is great just there. You can, of course, pass on any of these, but I thought of that recently.
Can I think about that? Can we come back to that?
Yeah, you can think about that. In the queue is the top five minds in North Carolina politics, past or present, wherever you want to go with. Favorite Thanksgiving dish?
Mashed potatoes. I'm not a huge Thanksgiving
person. With garlic,
person.
With butter, with cheese, with hot sauce?
With butter. I'm honestly not a huge Thanksgiving meal person.
Okay.
I work every year on Thanksgiving.
No judgment. I will be working as well this year on Thanksgiving, as I do most Thanksgivings. If you had to give up sweets or alcohol between now and January 2nd through the holidays.
Sweets.
All right.
I'm not a sweets person. That's not even a tough one.
I have asked that to several friends this week, just shooting the you-know-what kind of question, and all of them have said sweets, with the exception of one. One of my good buddies was like, alcohol, but everybody said sweets. over under the number of constitutional amendments that we see on the ballot in May? 3.5. Do you think we will see more or less constitutional amendments?
Less.
Okay.
Yeah. They have a hard time agreeing between these two chambers. Which ones? Less.
That's for sure. They do have a hard time agreeing. And we're back to it.
Oh, jeez.
Top five minds.
I feel like this is
in
a lot of pressure that anybody
politics.
Who's listening is going to be like, really?
Well, you got to come up with at least one R, one D. I mean, that would maybe be my only caveat. In all fairness, as you continue to think and just look at me and think, you son of a, like, what an awful question to throw somebody on the spot with. I don't have five names in my mind. There are several that I've thought about. But anyway, if you want to wade into it.
No, I mean, I think you can look historically, historically for the R&D. I think you can't go past, the Gary Pierce and... now I'm blanking.
Carter Wren?
And Carter Wren. I mean, to look at the R&D right there, the two of them with their historical knowledge and what they understand and
sure.
know in politics, it's hard to...
Right. Neither as necessarily as involved in the nitty-gritty today, but Carter Wren, longtime strategist for Senator Jesse Helms, Gary Pierce, longtime communications person and strategist for Governor Hunt. And we can leave it there if you want.
No, I mean, but I think if you... If we're going in the past also, I mean, you can't overlook somebody like Governor Hunt himself, what he was able to accomplish in the state and able to cross lines in the state. I think that he's a pretty dynamic figure in the political mind in North Carolina.
Sure.
Now I'm trying to come up with the Republican that I can juxtapose him with for North Carolina.
Well, I'll put this out there. You don't even have to touch this if you don't want. I think that a conversation about the top political minds in North Carolina right now probably has to include Jim Blaine, who's the chief of staff for Senator Berger.
I agree with that. That's actually a great one. He is able to not only come up with the issues that that the party can get behind, he knows how to get them passed,
right?
Yeah. He knows how to get this stuff become law, probably better than almost anybody else. That's a good one. There you go.
Okay.
You came up with a good Republican.
We'll leave it at 4 for now.
We'll leave it at 4.
All
yes.
right, listeners, you can tweet at one of us and tell us which political mind we missed, the most influential, the top political minds in North Carolina. Whatever it may be. Loretta Beniti is a senior political reporter with Spectrum News.
I am.
You can follow her on Twitter at Loretta Beniti. That's one T in the last name. And you can check out In Focus on Sundays, 11:30 in the morning, 8:30 in the evenings. Loretta, thanks for the conversation.
Thank you.
And thanks, as always, for tuning in to the WUNC Politics Podcast. Feel free to give us a review, good, bad, or indifferent, at Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever it is you get your podcasts. You can subscribe there as well. Throughout the week, stay up to date with political happenings at our website, WUNC.org. For Loretta, I'm Jeff. Have a great weekend.